Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
And welcome to episode 19 of the SJP Wrestling Podcast. On today's show, we are speaking with one half of the championship multi-title holding tag team Yair and Scare. We are speaking with wrestler Q-Ball about his time in the business, his time training, why he stepped away from the business for a few years, coming back into wrestling, and everything in between. It's a really interesting discussion. I hope you'll enjoy it. Before we do get to Q-Ball, however, I just want to let you know what's coming up on New Year's Eve, when the next episode, episode 20 of the SJP Wrestling Podcast, will be available to you. I'm hoping to do a sort of 2020 year in review with multiple guests. So people whose opinion I value very highly, who have certain companies that they enjoy, for example, one person is coming on to talk specifically about the year in AEW with me. Somebody else is coming on to talk specifically about NXT in 2020. Somebody else for Raw and SmackDown, the WWE in general for 2020. Somebody else is going to cover Japan with me. I'm hoping that by speaking to these people who watch the shows on a regular basis and have done all year, we can get a real informative look at these different companies with different people's perspectives and different people's areas of expertise when it comes to the wrestling they watch, I guess. I'm really excited about doing this show. It's going to be quite an undertaking for me, having multiple guests on the same episode, one of the most difficult ones I've attempted yet. Hopefully it all comes off and you enjoy it. Before we get any further, however, I just want to say to everyone a big, huge thank you. The Chops, Kicks and Near Falls website are running End of Year Podcast and Writer Awards. The SJP Wrestling Podcast has been nominated for the Best Weekly Show, and at the moment, with a few days left still to vote, is doing very, very well in that category. I have been nominated for Podcaster of the Year. And my other little project that I do with my awesome co-host Mags called Chain Wrestling, me and Mags for that show have been nominated for the Duo of the Year. Everyone who has put votes in, first of all, everyone who nominated us, it's really, you know, a huge thing. Thank you so, so much. I've only been doing this for a short time. I still feel very, very new, and like I'm still learning my way and making plenty of mistakes and so on. So thank you to everyone who was potentially nominated, and thank you to everyone who has voted for myself, Si, for the SJP Wrestling Podcast itself, and also for me and Mags with Chain Wrestling. It really does mean a great deal. I don't do this to sort of be boastful of numbers or clout or try and big myself up or anything. I do this because I really, really enjoy it. But the fact that other people are effectively, by way of contacting us through Twitter or voting in these polls, are saying that they enjoy it too, means a great deal to me. It really does mean the world. So thank you to everybody who has nominated or voted. The vote is still open for a few more days. I believe it's Boxing Day it closes. You can find it on the Twitter and so on, for definite. But I'm fairly certain it's Boxing Day it closes. So if you have not voted yet, and you do feel this way, it really would mean a great deal for you to jump on the Chops, Kicks and Near Falls link, tick a few boxes, chuck the SJP Wrestling Pod a couple of votes here and there, check myself, Si, a couple of votes here and there, and Mags and I for Chain Wrestling and Best Duo. That would be awesome. You can find the links via this show's Twitter, which is at SJP Wrestling Pod, or you can also find us on Instagram and Facebook using the same name, SJP Wrestling Pod. The links for the voting will be through Facebook and Twitter, though I'll share them mainly on there. And you can also find my other show, With Mags, at @chain_wrestling. I really hope that you are trying to give that a bit of a listen. It's a bit of a shorter show, normally around half an hour-ish. Just a light-hearted look at certain matches through the years. And then we have a little vote at the end to decide where we go next with people on Twitter. It's a real fun project. I love speaking wrestling with anyone, but especially with Mags. The guy's an absolute star. Hopefully you can take the time to jump on, chuck us a few votes in these topics, give chain wrestling a listen, and we can go from there. I think that's everything I need to cover today before we get to our guest, Q-Ball. But just before I do, I want to say to everyone, thank you so, so much for listening to these past 18 or so episodes. And obviously this episode is coming to you on Christmas Eve, so honestly, to you, all your families and friends, I wish you the greatest of Christmases that you can muster in these difficult times. I hope everyone has a wonderful time. Stay safe, and I will speak to you again on New Year's Eve. Merry Christmas, and thank you for listening. One half of the Ring Wrestling Stars Tag Team Champions, one half of the Slamdine Tag Team Champions, one half of the Saurian Sister Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. Q-Ball, welcome to the show, sir.
What's going on, man? How's it going?
Yeah, not bad. Not too bad. Really overjoyed to have you on. Have a good little chat about your career in this crazy world of professional wrestling.
Oh, yes. Yeah, crazy is the right word right now, yeah.
Very much so. Very much so. On that note, then, I suppose, considering how crazy the world is in general, how has the coronavirus lockdown situation affected you with regards to, I mean, you personally, and but more so you as a worker, as a wrestler? I mean, shows just aren't really happening in a lot of places, are they?
No. So it's been all right. It's been okay. It's affected my mental health a fair bit.
Okay.
But, you know, I've been quite open about that on my social media pages. You know, I did have a bit of a mental breakdown during the first lockdown within Wales. And, you know, it happens, you know, because this lockdown thing is really restricting a lot of guys, obviously not just wrestlers, but everybody, doing a lot of things. And it does affect us. And but thankfully, I'm a lot better now, thinking more positive, thinking more straight. You know, I'm doing really well now, in a positive place. And, yeah. It's okay. Not bad at the moment, yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry to hear about the initial setback there, but it's good to hear that you are doing much better now. I've seen some of the posts on your social media, and I mean, it is something with regards to mental health and so on in general, it is something very close to my heart. So with that kind of situation, I think it's great how, first of all, you managed to deal with it and seem to be in a better place now by your own admission. Yeah. But secondly, how open you were as well with regards to talking about it online, certain posts you put out there. I think awareness is a hugely important thing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, wrestlers, you know, we're not, we suffer as well, you know, I decided to be more open about my mental health because I just want to help people. That's all I really want to do. You know, I can't be in the ring wrestling, entertaining the punters. So My way of trying to help and do something was to, you know, put my mental health on my page so people can see and think, oh, actually, you know what? You know, he is a wrestler and he also does suffer. You know, so hopefully, I'm hoping I have helped people, you know, be able to open up. Because, as you know yourself, you just said, you know, you have your demons and all that. And, you know, opening up and speaking about it does help a lot. But it is a case of kicking yourself at the backside to be able to actually speak about it.
Yes, it's a big that initial step, I believe, actually having the conversation, so to speak, speaking to whoever it may be that you decide to speak to, whether a family member, a doctor, or just a mate, or that person you take that initial step with, I think that initial step is potentially the biggest. It's potentially the scariest, because you're making an admission of something. Whether you fully understand what you're talking about at the time or not, you're saying something isn't quite right here, regardless of whether you know the reasons for it or not. Yeah. I think that initial step is the biggest and potentially the scariest. But once that initial step has been made, I think that all the following steps, providing people are listening to you, which they will do if people decide to reach out, the following steps, I think, are always tend to be in the right direction and tend to be a help.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. That's good. Okay. So then, I mean, you say that you've not been working as much, obviously, due to the lockdown and so on. Let's go way, way back to the very beginning then, before you were even stepping foot in the ring yourself. When, how, I suppose, did you first discover this insane world of blokes pretending to beat themselves up?
So, going back to 1996, I was three years old, and my first kind of thing I ever seen in wrestling, my first memory of wrestling was watching WWF. I think they'd done it on Saturday morning, so almost like a repeat kind of thing. You know, this is what happened or something.
Yeah, you used to get the sort of the main shows, I think, on different channels, but I think maybe Sky One or Channel 4 sometimes had like you said, a sort of catch up or highlights. Yeah, that's right. I remember something like that. Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, I sat there in front of the TV, and my first memory of watching wrestling on the TV, it was just after Kane debuted. And when Undertaker and Kane was having that little feud thing they was doing, I say little, but obviously it's one of the most fantastic storylines you're ever going to get out of
wrestling. Oh, definitely. It went on for so long, so many twists and turns. It was brilliant. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. That's where I fell in love with wrestling, just from watching them to do what they do best. And yeah, you know, I remember saying to because I was watching it with my uncle, I remember saying to him, you know, one day I'm going to be there. I'd love to be there. And, you know, I'm not in WWE or anything right now. And who knows, maybe I might do, maybe I won't. But, I stepped foot in the ring and I'm somewhat doing that. And I'm happy with where I'm at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. I mean, are those, is it very much Undertaker and Kane that were your early favourites? Or was that just literally your first entry into watching, and other people caught your eye as well?
Undertaker and Kane originally were my favourites, but then as I started watching it more and becoming more aware of the actual other people in wrestling, you know, you had Triple H, Shawn Michaels, DX at the time, mm-hmm. You know, you had I can't even remember who else, Stone Cold, The Rock,
yeah,
you know, you had all them guys, you know, in the Attitude Era, and you know, they're the main guys that I think everybody thinks of when they think of Attitude Era, I would say.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Especially with Austin and Vince McMahon storylines.
That's right. I'll beep that out, sorry.
Yeah. Excuse my language, sorry, guys.
No problem. No worries.
But that, I think they are the first guys you really think of when you think of Attitude Era and WWF.
Yeah, I mean, what a brilliant time as well to literally sort of catch it on the television, because there's so much going on in that era. I mean, it was obviously a huge boom period for wrestling in general. I mean, on the other channel, you of course had the NWO, this whole Sting and Goldberg eventually a little bit later on, and then what you were viewing was a huge moneymaker for the WWF. Obviously, it was one of the biggest boom periods they ever had. So it shows how popular that was all over the world. I mean, what a great time to start watching. Things like that fascinate me, because if you'd have maybe stumbled across the TV show, I don't know, 3 or 4 years earlier, you might have seen something like Doink the Clown or Skinner or someone like that and thought, what the hell is this nonsense, you know? Or it may have inspired you even more. Nobody ever really knows. But how people sort of discover it in the first place, I find absolutely fascinating.
Well, yeah, I mean, everybody's got a story, haven't they, of how they found
it? Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Okay, I mean, you say pretty much straight away as 13, I believe you said you were, didn't you? Yes.
No, three. 1996. I was three.
Oh, three. Apologies. So at three years of age, you were saying. At 3 years of age, you were saying, "Oh, I want to do this already."
Yeah.
Why? Okay. I mean, that's.
I don't know why, but that was the thing seen on TV. I was like, I want to do that. And
yeah, no, I mean, it makes sense. Yeah. I mean, you're looking at these huge, larger than life characters at a very impressionable age. It's easy to sort of, I suppose, look at it and go, "Wow, look at these heroes! Look at these wonderful characters! I want to be like them." Of course, no, it makes perfect sense. Yeah. So, from the age of three, eventually, then you decide one day, I'm going to now look at a school. I'm going to now go and train, or I'm going to now take another step towards getting involved. Yeah. At what age was that, and how did that process sort of come around? What made you decide from one day to not doing this to the next day to going, okay, now I'm going to make that decision?
So how old have I been? It was 2009. I decided to take that step into wrestling, if you will. Only because where I lived in Chooksbury, there was a promotion named, you may know who these are, Pro EVW, which are now Evolution Wrestling.
Yeah, I'm very aware of them, yeah.
Yeah, so they came to my hometown in Chooksbury. I turned up to watch some stuff. You know, we had there's guys like T-Bone, there was Charlie Sterling, which was Charlie Garrett at the time. Who else was there? Tommy Gunn. I can't remember anybody else. It's so long ago, I can't remember, but... You know, and then on the signs, on the walls, sorry, of the venue, there was, you know, come to Gloucester for Pro EVW training. So we did. Next day, you know, I spoke to promoter Robbo, and, you know, started chatting away and all that. On the Sunday, got down to Gloucester, and it was Hempstead Village Hall. It was only a small village hall.
Okay.
And, you know, I think on the day, Gilligan Gordon was there. There was another guy who was there, but I'm not going to say his name for reasons.
Okay, no problem.
Yeah. It was all there on my first day. So it was like it was a big day, I think, for the actual academy itself. You know, got put through all the bumps, all through all the drills. And, you know, it was an experience. And I loved it. It was something that I really enjoyed doing. I was like, yes, next Sunday I'll be coming back. Even though the following day I went back into school and I was aching like I was aching like fudge. But I never turned back, and, you know, I still love it to this day.
Yeah, I mean, you say about the aching and so on. I mean, that's one of the questions I always ask people who have, even whether it's been one training session or they've been wrestling on events for years, is one question that I always find absolutely fascinating is, stood outside the door just before you're about to walk in for the first time, were there any nerves? What was the emotions and the feelings there? And also the first bump you took.
Oh, God. Emotions. Wow. Okay, so... stepping through that door, there was all these, you know, these guys have been doing it for months, years, whatever already. I, not necessarily scared, I was more intimidated. I was like, damn. You know, so you had guys like Rory White there. You had Tom Fraser, which is Tom Fraser, or whatever, them two together were AOV and Backers of Violence at the time. You know, they helped me when I first came into wrestling. So, you know, much respect to them. If they listen to this, thank you very much. Then you had, again, you had Gilligan Gordon, who was taking the newbies like myself through the bumps and all the drills. It was just intimidating. But the longer I spent there on that day, the more comfortable I got, because they made me feel really welcome. Which, again, you know, if any of the guys listen to this, you know, I want to say thank you for making a kid, a teenager that I was, feeling really warm and welcome. But taking my first bump, man, it's one of them things, you just gotta do it, haven't you? You just gotta just chuck yourself back and hope for the best, and, you know, tuck your chin and spread your arms out, make that bump, and the first one you take is like, oh, it's almost like you blow yourself to a point. And but you know, you do it a couple more times after. You know, you start from the way I got taught. Cause everybody gets taught differently how to bump. The way I got taught was just to roll on your back, first of all, just to get with the motion of how you're supposed to be going. From the squat position, sorry, you know, basically squatting and going back, just rolling back, and then, you know, just chuck your arms out. And then,
so sort of a slow progression to building up to something, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. And then the more comfortable you get with that, the higher, you know, the more, the higher, I guess, you get with doing it. And then when you feel even more comfortable, it was like, right, Jack, keyboard, whatever, my real name is Jack, whatever. I want you to just go back now. I want you to jump. I was like, really? You want me to jump? This wasn't in the wrestling ring, mind. This was just on the pads, you know, the somewhat thick pads. So, okay, all right, let's try this then. Let's do it. You know, got the adrenaline kicking in now because I'm in pain, but what I still want to do is I want to show the trainers that I can do this and stuff.
Yeah, sure.
I done it and bang. Probably on the floor for a couple of minutes because, like, oh my god! But you know, I mean, it's great. It was great, you know.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's the two things that are sort of the big. There's obviously more to it. Don't get me wrong. Of course, there is. I mean, I'm very much outside looking in. But those are two things that always stand out to me as a fan talking to you guys. That initial walk through the door and that first bump, and it's fascinating how many people say the same thing about being in the car park or walking across the drive or going up to the door for the first time and feeling either intimidated or nervous or potentially scared of what they're going to be greeted by.
Yeah.
Building up the confidence to actually open that door and then finding that they were worried about not much. The people on the other side were very helpful, were very supportive and friendly, which I think is fantastic because it would be so easy to... for want of a better term, I suppose, so easy to ward or frighten people off if they're confronted straight away by people who make their nerves justified.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So, I mean, that was training there with Evolution Wrestling, as they're known now, I suppose. Where did you go from there? How long were you training with them? And was your first actual performance, was your first match actually with that company?
Yeah, so I was with Evolution Wrestling for a couple of years. About 2 years, I think, I was with them for. And my debut match was actually... So the first time I stepped in the ring and started training was February 2009.
Okay.
If I'm correct, if I'm rightly saying, my first debut match, it was only in an academy show. But to me, it was still a match. You know, it was your first match, essentially, in front of...
Don't sell it short. I mean, us academy shows, you know, there's some great action that goes on in them as well. I mean, you're actually fulfilling a dream that you've had since the 3 years of age. You're stepping between the ropes at a show.
Yeah, definitely. So, my debut match was, I want to say, June or July of 2009. So I had a couple of months and, you know, Robbo, the promoter, had faith in me that I could put a match together. And I worked with AOV, Ambassadors of Violence, which was Rory White and Tom Fraser.
Mm-hmm.
It was a handicap match. So it was me. Back then, I was named JP, just my initials, right? So it was JP versus Ambassadors of Violence. It was a good match. You know, it was going to be as good as it was going to be, you know, with somebody like me against people like them. They carried me through it. You know, I was green as grass, blah, 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 blah. Got through it. But yeah, I was with them for a couple of years and then I decided, well, you know, like personal life got in the way a little bit so I couldn't train as often as I wanted to. And, you know, I still done bits for a while, but, you know, it's sort of just, I don't know, it's almost like I let go of the whole wrestling thing because I didn't think I could carry on.
Right, okay. Anyway.
But yeah, you know. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you say that you didn't think you could carry on. Was it literally a case of
I mean, it happens in all walks of life, I suppose, with people doing things outside of family and work. Was it just a case of life getting in the way, or were you maybe thinking this wasn't for you for some reason? Were you falling out of love with wrestling or anything? Or was it, you know, explain that process to me.
So, no, I can't really say I've ever fallen out of love with wrestling. The politics, okay. The politics I've fallen out with, you fall out of love with easily. But the wrestling itself, no, it was more a case of actual personal life and working. And I had a full-time job, and it was like, well, the realism of it is, you got to work. You know, wrestling isn't going to pay bills unless you get, you know, unless you're a big-time competitor in the UK or in the world independent scene. You know, there's only a handful of people in the UK that I know of who actually live off this full-time. That's not in WWE or any major companies. But yeah, it was just work life. You know, I had to, because I had bills and stuff to pay for. So yeah, so the wrestling side sort of had to be put on hold a little bit. Like I said,
life gets in the way, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I still kept in the loop with guys, and you know, I still spoke to them, done a couple of odd jobs, and you know, and all that. But you know, just sort of went a bit after a while, which is unfortunate. But you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, it happens, doesn't it, in all walks of life. It's the way the world is, I guess. You mentioned there that you were initially wrestling under JP as your initials. I mean, that was the Insane Star JP, I believe.
Oh, is that the title you yourself? How would you know that?
I tried to do a little bit of research. I tried to act at least semi-professional. How long were you wrestling under that name for? And talk me through the idea of this initial gimmick you had, because after that, you eventually progressed into being Alistair Michelson, is that correct?
Yeah, it was Alistair Michelson, yeah.
Michelson, yeah. Apologies, yeah.
It's all right, I'll let you off, it's fine, it's all good. So, the Insane Star JP, wow. I had this JP gimmick where it was literally just me, you know, this rip-off kind of Jeff Hardy kind of thing that everybody does when they first join wrestling. Oh, I want to be Jeff Hardy. Oh, I want to be Undertaker, blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. So I was like, nah, I need to get... You know, as I was sort of learning the business a bit more, I was like, nah, I need to get out of this crap. I need to get out of it. So I did. So I went with the Insane Star JP. So this gimmick was based off when Sting was going through his whole insane kind of thing in TNA. Do you remember, if you remember that?
Oh yeah, I really enjoyed that, and he had the Joker face paint at some point. And yeah, I thought that was really, I really enjoyed that time in TNA in general, but Sting as well. There, I thought it was fantastic. Yeah,
yeah. So that's kind of where I got the main idea from. You know, I kind of had the I like to put my personality into gimmicks, you know, so it's me, so I can believe in myself and all that. And I was like, right, well, if Sting can do this, and this is a guy who has done a few different gimmicks in his time, you know, he's done Surf Sting, he's done Crow Sting, you know, he's just done Sting. And, you know, so maybe it was a case of, if I watch what he does as this insane psychopathic, like Joker-esque kind of gimmick, then maybe I can put this into my gimmick. And you know, that's what I've done. So it's still part of me, to a point. It was like the wackier side of me, but it was also a bit of the whole Joker Sting kind of thing.
That's great.
I had fun doing it, you know. I was this, I had fluffy leg warmers, you know, I don't know, and just bright clothing, you know. So I you know, I kind of looked the part, I suppose, but looking back and thinking about the stuff I did as JP, it's just like, well, you know, I had people say to me, this, you shouldn't be doing this, and I didn't listen because I was young and I thought I knew what was best.
Yeah,
I wish I listened to them sooner, because not, you know, it was good, it, you know, it, you know, a lot of people enjoyed it, a lot of like workers enjoyed it, but I think it done more damage to me than it should have, if that makes sense.
Okay. I mean, and how do you mean by that? Do you mean like people weren't taking it seriously, or?
Well, it's not a serious gimmick, is it? Let's face it. It wasn't a serious gimmick at all. A lot of people thought I was trying to ruin the business. I was trying to ruin some of that people that like wrestlers love, and it wasn't that at all. I wasn't trying to do that at all. It was just me having fun, because that's what you should be
doing. Yeah, of course. I mean, I don't quite follow how you, I mean, obviously, I've not witnessed the gimmick myself. Yeah. But you're saying that people thought that he was trying to ruin the business in some. And so, are you talking other wrestlers there, or?
Yeah, you know, other wrestlers thought I was trying to ruin the business. Like, I'm not going to mention names because it's just in the past. There's no need to.
No, of course, no, definitely. Yeah. We don't need to mention names in any way, shape, or form. I'm not about all that sort of stuff. I'm just more interested in the thought process these people potentially had and your reaction to it. I mean, ultimately, I'm intrigued by your career and your journey, so I'm sort of very interested in how that worked.
Yeah. So, you know, it came to the point where I wasn't listening to people. I was like, no, I'm going to carry on. You know, I've got a little bit of a fan base going on with the shows I used to go to and all that. And one day, the said person actually came to my, at the time, girlfriend's house and threatened her because of this. I'm not going to go into too much detail because there's no need. We're going to keep this all happy and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, of course. So, yeah.
Just for that reason, I you know, packed it in and I sort of retired from wrestling. I thought that was going to be it for me. So that was, I was out of wrestling for 4 years then when that happened.
What, doing nothing at all? No training or no one-off shots or anything like that? Just literally walked away?
Yeah, I walked away because it was just a case of, you know what? You know, somebody's come to my house and threatened my wife. And
over a wrestling gimmick. It's in
a wrestling gimmick because
that's insane. I cannot get my head around that at all.
Yeah. I know. You know, it is what it is, you know. This happens in the past, you know.
Yeah, no, I understand that. That absolutely takes my breath away. So you then say you're out of the business for 4 years because of that, and I can fully understand why you'd want to walk away. Yeah. I mean, to me, that would be a case of, I'd literally be thinking, sod this. I you know, it ain't worth the hassle. But at the same time, putting a different spin on it, I suppose, we speak again about the incredibly young age of 3 years of age, 3 years old, that you started watching these guys on the television, wanted to be involved, grew up, started training, went through into this gimmick you devised, and then to effectively feel you had to walk away because somebody was that spiteful, that nasty, that threatening, however you want to word it. That must have been quite a difficult decision to make, I would assume. But then 4 years pass and you decide to come back, which is brilliant. What was it that made you decide after that little duration away to come back?
I wanted to come back. I felt like 4 years was long enough. You know, I had my time out.
Were you missing it?
And it was, I thought maybe people had forgotten about me. So I was like, all right.
Okay.
So me and my wife sort of discussed it. And, you know, there was because I live in, at this point now, I live in Wales. And there was there's a training school, you know, obviously, there's a training school in Blackwood, South Wales, and it's called Knockout Pro Wrestling. And yeah, I thought, you know what, I found this school. I know a couple of people who actually go there from being, you know, from my first run in wrestling, you know, got friends with a couple of guys who live in Wales. So I was like, right, I'm going to go to this one because I know guys there. I know they're not going to judge me, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, I found Knockout Pro Wrestling, and then it all started again, you know. Nothing bad's happened yet, thankfully. Good. But, yeah.
So, that 4 years you were out, obviously, you had the decision to make that you took to step away, and I can fully understand why with the story you've just told me. During that 4 years, I mean, if that situation didn't happen, I'm assuming you probably wouldn't have stepped away as readily. So during that 4 years, did you miss it, or were you happy to be away from it for a while? Was the break good? How was that time before you decided to come back?
So at first, I don't know, maybe like three and a half years, I enjoyed it, you know, because I had, you know, I was hurting, and so it was nice to sort of have that like kind of break from it. You know, it's like I'd been wrestling since I was 16. I'd been doing a training, and there was almost like it was kind of a blessing in disguise, if you will, that it happened. So, you know, like I said, I was able to sort of recharge, kind of focus on my actual on myself, and mm-hmm. you know, have a family, get married, and get a house and all that. But I'm completely lost where I'm going with this now. I can't remember.
Yeah, no problem. You were you said after about 3.5 years of being away. Yeah.
Yeah. So then it came to like the last half of the year, and I was like, no, it's not that I fell out of love with wrestling. It's more, I couldn't watch it because I couldn't do what I was watching. So I was like, no, I can't watch this anymore. And I just, maybe I did fall out of love of wrestling, but it was more of a hate towards it because I couldn't do what they was, you know, what I was watching, you know. At this time, you had like the Shield come in and, you know, they had like a really good run. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. And then, you know, you had Daniel Bryan, you had CM Punk and all that, you know. It's just like, oh, God, I really want to be doing this. But it was just.
So was it like a frustration then almost that you were still watching what you loved, but couldn't, I suppose, participate yourself?
Yeah, that's a much better way of saying it. Thank you. Yeah, it's more frustrating.
No problem.
You know, I still kept in contact with a few of the guys when I was out, and but even towards a lot of the guys who I was sort of built up a kind of a bit of a you know, stuff you guys kind of thing. Not their fault. It's purely down to my, you know, it was my fault, is my mental state and all that. But yeah, you know, I came back into wrestling then, and you know, went to Knockout Pro Wrestling Academy in Blackwood, and yeah, you know.
So was that just back training for a little while, just to sort of get yourself back up to speed?
Excuse me. No, so I'm still with them now to a point. Yeah, so I went back in 2008. No, went back in 2017 under the gimmick of Alistair Michelson.
Okay, talk me through that. I mean, you've had this time away, the Insane Star JP you've decided to ditch, and you've moved on to this new name, this new gimmick. What are the big differences? Why did you make that change? Talk me through that process. I mean, I suppose creative process, because you're the one who's creating this persona. Talk me through how that works.
Right. So as I as I said, talking about the insane gimmick, I like to incorporate myself into gimmicks to make it more believable and, you know, and all that.
Yeah, makes sense.
This Alistair Michelson was the darker side of me. This is the kind of like the hacked off version, you know, the person who's not going to take any bull crap.
Yeah.
Just pure darkness kind of thing. You know, I'd be going out, my face is all it's just covered. I had a hood. You know, I moved more slowly, and you know, I made it look like I was literally going to kick the living crap into you kind of thing. You know, I was a force not to be reckoned with kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, you know, that came to an end quite soon because it wasn't getting anywhere. It wasn't really doing me any favors. And, you know, I had to evolve again, almost like a reincarnation, I suppose, if you want to say that.
And okay. Then,
you know, spoke to promoter. We had a few ideas, like a Viking gimmick pops up. I'm like, nope. Straight away, I'm not doing that. I've not got anything against Vikings. It's just I just don't feel like I could have done it.
And again, you've got to have a link there yourself, haven't you? You say about the first two gimmicks we're discussing here, from how you've described them, two very different personas, but both you say you can link back to aspects of your own personality. So if you don't feel it with, say, a Viking gimmick, to me, that makes perfect sense, not wanting to do that.
Yeah, definitely. And then, you know, I started, like, you know, just brainstorming. And it's like, so why? Let me have a go at doing something like I am now, you know. So where I could be mouthy, I can be heel or face, whatever you want me to be, and I can just have a lot of more freedom. So, this is how I try. This is how I describe it. So you see Mark Calloway as the Undertaker, right? When he first came into WWF, he was Undertaker, like the proper Undertaker. You know, he moved very slowly. There was no like vocal kind of selling or anything like that. He was just boom. That was it. So then when he went to American Badass, you know yourself from watching wrestling and he was able to be more vocal. He's able to have more freedom in his gimmick and do more things. And you know where I'm going? Yeah.
Yeah, totally. He's I suppose he's took the edge off the sort of dead man gimmick, and he's a little bit more, I suppose, as daft as it sounds, a little bit more human potentially. And he ran as a heel and a face at different times away from the dead man gimmick, didn't he?
Yeah, definitely. And, I was like, right, let's try this. Let's see if we can work. Let me see if I can do this. But then trying to come up with a name, it was fairly easy, actually, I must admit. So the name Cueball, that comes from basically, you know, so you're playing pool or snooker, you know, you got the cue ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that idea because if I'm heel, people could take the mick out of it because I'm bold.
Okay.
You know, so it's cheap heat, you know. So I was like, right, well, that's going to work, cheap heat. So instantly you get the whole boldy chance going on. You know, originally Cueball was heel, but then as time's gone on, he's just more of a neutral, if you will. You know, he's not face, he's not heel, he's just in between kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, no, I understand. Depends on the situation he's in, I guess.
Yeah, and, you know, I've enjoyed it. I would say I've enjoyed being Cueball over doing this whole JP malarkey and Alistair Michelson, because it's this Cueball is more me.
I mean, that's something that they always talk about as well, isn't it? How the really successful gimmicks, for want of a better term, the really successful characters are like an extended version of the person portraying them. So, I mean, Steve Austin is the one that I hear used as an example the most by different people on podcasts and shoot interviews online and all that sort of stuff. The Steve Austin, the Stone Cold Steve Austin character, is the real Steve Austin, Steve Williams, I believe his name is, amplified. And the Vince McMahon, Mr. McMahon character is Vince McMahon just amplified. And it seems that those sort of successful characters that, you know, I'm not talking successful as in make loads of money, big arenas. I'm talking successful as in they do the job they have to, which is resonate with the crowd, make links with the crowd. They all come from that sort of expanding on an aspect of your own personality. And it's really curious that you've had these three gimmicks now, and each one you describe as being quite different. But they all come from something that you feel from within yourself. You mentioned there as well with the Cueball character that you effectively work heel, face, depending on the situation. And you are currently, I imagine your gear bag when you go from venue to venue is very heavy with the amount of gold you must be dragging around with all the championships you currently sport. But that's obviously as part of a tag team there. Yair and Scare with Big D.
Yeah.
Which do you prefer? We'll start off with the heel and face because that's what we discussed originally. Which do you prefer, working heel or working face? Do you have a preference?
I don't know. It's like you said, it's a situation kind of thing. I mean, where I don't know, face. I'll say face. I prefer working face because I feel I can do more of the emotional side of things when I'm face, you know. So being able to get the crowd on my side, I feel like I can do that more. And I think naturally, just with me, I'm more face anyway. Even when I'm booked to be heel, I just come over more as face. I don't know what it is. it's just, okay, so a good example, right? So a couple of years back, I got as keyboard, I got booked for a company called HCW, which is in Worcester.
Okay, yeah.
It was Team Wales, which was me and a wrestler called Ryan Charles versus Team England, which was Bulldog the Biker and Lewis Blaine. And it should be Team England that should be getting the cheers, right?
Yeah, because of where you are, yeah.
Yeah, but as soon as I went came out, we got the cheers. And the Team England, whatever, got the boos.
Oh, okay.
So, to me, it's like, well, maybe I should just kind of be a face, but not a face. If that makes sense, you know, just more of the guy you love to hate kind of thing, you know? Kind of the Steve Austin thing, I guess you could say.
Yeah, that kind of edgier sort of, not the sort of Hulk Hogan slapping people's hands, say your prayers kind of good guy, but maybe a bit more of a realistic. Yeah. I mean, because even with in the real world, in real life, you have good and bad people, but it doesn't necessarily mean that good people do good things all the time. Good people are capable of doing bad things. Of course they are, but it still doesn't mean they're not a good person. So I suppose you've got that edge to that style of that edge to the persona, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you know, I like to think I can sort of one minute have the crowd like me and then the next minute I can get them to hate me. You know, that's what I try to do anyway.
No, that makes sense. I mean, that's a very good ability to have in what you're doing. So the next part of that question, I guess, when comparing different aspects of what you've done, you're having great success at the moment as one half of a tag team.
Yeah.
But of course, you've worked singles matches in the past as well. Do you have a preference there? And also, as I suppose, a follow-up, is it difficult going from wrestling as a singles to a tag and maybe back again? Is it difficult to adjust?
I would say yes, it is quite difficult to adjust. When you've been doing singles so long, you know, you've got to, you know what's going to happen in the matches and all that. So I sometimes find it sometimes find it difficult to do tag team matches because I feel like I need to know what everybody's doing to a point.
Okay. So
not only I need to know what I'm doing, I need to know what both of my opponents are doing and what Big D is doing. When really I don't really need to be worrying about what he's doing, but I still do, and then I can sometimes get myself in a bit of a kerfuffle. But you know, there are also, I do have a lot of fun in the Aaron Scare, the tag team, you know, working with Big D. You know, he's supposed to be the Scare, but he's just a big, lovable, cuddly bear, if you will. So you could say it's Aaron Bear.
Yeah, Aaron Bear. There's some merchandise in there somewhere.
Yeah. Like a big Care Bear kind of thing going, yeah, or something. I don't know.
Exactly. Just with a title belt over his shoulder or something like that.
Yeah. But no, you know, it's one of things, you know, some nights the tag team matches are better than the singles matches, and then some nights the singles matches are better than the tag team matches. It just depends, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people I speak to who I ask that question, if they've been working as a tag and a singles at different times. There's another one, the same as first bump and sort of stepping through the door of the training center for the first time, that really intrigues me. Yeah. The difference between going from a singles to a tag. And it's amazing how many people say pretty much the same thing, that working as a singles is good because you only got to think about yourself and your opponent. But then working as a tag, you've got more people to think and worry about.
Yeah.
You tend to sort of almost get the same thread of answers each time I ask that question. So it's fascinating to me because obviously people are trained in different places. They work with different companies and different wrestlers, but the feelings tend to be kind of similar across the board.
Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay. So, I mean, as we're sort of drawing to a bit of a close here then, you mentioned the team there with Big D, Yair and Scare. How long have you two been actually working alongside each other? As I said when we introduced you, you're currently champions on tag team champions of three different companies, which is quite an achievement at the same time. How long have you known each other? Were you friends before wrestling? Tell me the story there.
So obviously, Big D's from Wales. Never knew who Big D was. He happened to train at the same at Knockout Pro Wrestling, and you know, if we're going to go all wrestling about this, keeping kayfabe alive, we didn't really get on. You know, it was just one of them things, you know, both big guys, and we just tried to outdo each other.
Okay.
You know, so we never really done much together kind of thing. And then when we first started working for Ring Wrestling Stars, the promoter put me and him together. And yeah, we had a few matches together, and I still currently hold the winning streak against him. You know, I think it was, I've had four wins and he's had three wins to me, so I'm still winning. So we still tease each other about that.
Brilliant. And,
you know, August 2018 came around for Cirencester Wrestling Federation, and they needed a tag team for their title, for their tag team championship match. So I said to Big D, right, I've had enough of going against each other now, because we're kicking the crap into each other for nothing, really. Let's see what we got together. Let's see what we can do together. So August 2018 for Cirencester Wrestling Federation, we were in a tag team match, and we win. You know, we beat a tribute to Cruel Connection and Casey Wilde and Justin Powell. We beat them. It was a triple threat elimination tag team match. So there, we won our first title, our first tag team titles.
Okay, in your first match teaming together.
Yeah, our first official match is Yaron Scare. That's, we won our first tag team bounce.
Okay.
So we was like, oh, this is good. So maybe we are quite good together. So, you know, we put our differences aside and started to become more friendly. 9th of November 2019, Ring Wrestling Stars want to put Yaron Scare against Dogs of War, which is Bulldog the Biker and Ryan Charles. That same night, November 9th, 2019, Yaron Scare win the Ring Wrestling Stars Tag Team Championship bounce. So this is cool. This is going awesome. You know, every title defense we've had with these bouts we've defended, we've kept them. You know, people might say that we cheat to win, but I would say we creatively win.
You're inventive, yep.
Yeah, we're inventive of how we win. You know, it might not be to everybody's taste, but, you know, we know what to do. And I think Big D's learned a lot about that through me, because I've shown him a few things. And then Slamdown Wrestling UK came to us. Obviously, we haven't been able to wrestle for them yet because of the lockdown in England.
Yeah, they're a very, very new company, aren't they?
Yeah, very, very new. And so I think, oh no, don't worry. I'm not going to say that. Don't worry, because that never happens. Don't worry. They approached us, the promoter of Slamats. No, it's not. It's Slamdown Wrestling approached us and said, look, we need tag team champions. We need a good team to hopefully build us this company up. Would you like to be our tag team champions? And straight away we was like, well, would you rather us have a match first to actually, you know, become the champs, or what? He said, no, I want to put you two as our champs, because we feel you could elevate the company, you know, just to start off with. So, yeah, that's we haven't had an official match yet with the Slamdown Wrestling UK. But, yeah, that's our story, basically.
Yeah, and it seems to be one very much of success from day one, doesn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, hopefully there'll be continued success. But, yeah, you know.
Yeah, it's great. It's good stuff. And again, as we're coming very much to an end here, now you've been back involved in wrestling for a little while after your hiatus, and we mentioned at the start of the show the mental health issues that you've experienced in recent lockdown times. How do you personally feel everything is going right now? I mean, to me, holding belts in three different companies and the way you talk about Big D and the Air and Scare team, it all seems very positive for me outside looking in.
In terms of the Air and Scare, do you mean, or just as in my career?
In general, yeah, in your career, and yeah, I mean, yeah, and Scare is obviously a big part of your career now. Just sort of in general, and how you feel things are going, and where you want to go in the future when lockdown allows.
I think everything is going good with myself and Yair and Scare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had the opportunity to defend the RWS titles back in October, and we're supposed to be defending them in December. And, you know, hopefully we will retain. But if we don't, you know what? We don't retain. We lose them, and then we can go on to the other things. You know, that's just the way wrestling is. You know, I'm not going to get sour about it. We just got to move on. We've got to build ourselves back up again. We've got to put these other guys over. That's our jobs at the end of the day. But yeah, and Scare, I think we're doing really well for ourselves. I think and hoping we can get some more tag team titles around our, I say waists, but we're too big, around our shoulders.
Oh, no, I'll tell you what, I you mentioned this. I've seen a great couple of images and stories on your social media about a huge weight loss you've recently put the effort in to achieve. I mean, congratulations. It's incredible.
As of today, I am 5 stone lighter.
So, I mean, that's incredible. That's almost like, you know, that's insane. That's a huge amount of weight to have shifted. So testament to you and your commitment there. That's absolutely brilliant. Well done. Yeah, so again, thank you very, very much for coming on the show today and talking us through your career and various different gimmicks and the sort of stop-start you had a few years back. I really, really appreciate your time today.
Thanks for inviting me on, man. I hope everything goes really well with SJP Podcast, and yeah, it seems to go really well for you. And I just hope you have continued success, if you will.
Sorry, you broke a little bit there, mate. I do apologise.
Oh, that's all right. Sorry, I was just saying. I hope you continue to have really good success with your podcast, because it's going really well for you so far, from what I've seen. So,
no, I appreciate that. Thank you. That's great. Yeah, I mean, I really enjoy doing it. I'm really grateful to the people who come on. I'm especially grateful for the couple of people that gave me the kick up the backside and motivated me to start, because I wouldn't have done it without them. So, a little shout out to my wife Sharon and my podcast bud Mags there, but yeah, it's great. I really enjoy it. I'm really thankful when I get to hear these wonderful stories from people such as yourself, and how, because everyone's story is different, and I found our discussion today absolutely fascinating with the things that have happened, the gimmicks you've gone through, and where you are now. So again, thank you hugely for taking the time to speak with me this afternoon. On the topic actually of shows, you have your own, don't you? Your own YouTube podcast interview show. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so my podcast, video cast, whatever you want to call it, it's called Q-Ball's Bearded Rambles, and that's basically what we're doing now, but it's on video form, so you can see our beautiful faces. I do exactly what you do. I sit down with some wrestlers and we talk about their career, how they got into it, where they'd like to be. You know, we just speak about their training, and basically what we've spoken about today is pretty much what I talk about. So, it, you know, but that's on YouTube. I've had a bit of a hiatus from that for recent weeks, but I'm looking to bring it back. You know, I've had a bit more interest again, so maybe you should come on mine.
Oh, love to, mate. I mean, I've not got anywhere near as fascinating, as interesting as a story as yourself. Or, I mean, I've watched a few episodes of your show. The Liam Jones one stands out to me. I watched that recently.
Known him since he was a baby, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very much outside looking in when it comes to the wrestling business, but I'm more than happy to talk wrestling with anyone. So, yeah, anytime you want a guest, I'm more than happy to pop on. Just let everyone out there listening know where they can find you on the social medias.
I'm only on Facebook because I'm not a Twitter thing, because that's just full of negativity. So it's just on Facebook, Cubor. That's literally all it is, just a bald-headed brawler. Like my page, you know, there's stuff on there. You got my weight loss journey, you got... I support my local community of Newport, South Wales on there. Follow, you know, I've got my story of mental health on there, got the wrestling side of me. I've pretty much got a lot of things on there going on. It's not just about wrestling.
But that's just me. Yeah, yeah, it's great. I mean, again, this is where I sort of, when we initially started talking about you coming on the show, I of course do a bit of research. I look online, look through your page and so on. And it is very fascinating, the different aspects of what you have going on. It is great stuff. And again, with the YouTube show as well, if people want to take the opportunity to go on to Cubor's Facebook page, find the links, have a little look at those. When this show comes out, I'll naturally tag you in it, and you can tag a few videos on the end as well, so people can see. It's well worth popping on and having a look at some of these video interviews that Cubor does. I've enjoyed the ones I've seen. I'm sure you will too.
Thank you very much.
No problem. Again, thank you very much for your time, sir. I hope we can have you back on and speak more wrestling soon when lockdown eases. And I wish you good luck for everything in the future.
Thank you very much, man. Enjoyed speaking to you.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you. Bye bye.